Yeah, man, how you doing?
Come on,
you good?
Come on,
I know you like that.
Yeah, good, man. Don't do that.
I know you like that.
How long you been back?
Good morning and welcome into another edition of The Saturday Show. I am one of your hosts, Michelle Bodkin. Your other host, Jake Hatch, is enjoying a little paternity time. So he's going to be out this go around, but I do have our wonderful producer, Christian Esparza, with me for the ride. Christian, how are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah, it's. I don't think I've ever stepped in and filled in on this show, so I'm excited to help you out a little bit, especially with... I know that our company is very generous with their paternity leave.
Yeah.
So awesome for Jake to take advantage of that. We'll have fun.
We will. Now, you guys will probably notice this is going to be a shortened edition of the Saturday Show. We, of course, have Real Salt Lake, which we will talk about a little bit later on. We'll have the pre-show and, of course, the actual broadcast of the game coming up later today. But first, you know, let's do what we traditionally do. Let's talk about highlights of the week. Christian, do you have one?
Yeah. Let's go back to Tuesday night. Utah State got a crazy win over Fresno State. I work a lot of the Utah State games. I didn't work this one. I was watching at home, but... Fresno State is not a team that Utah State should have struggled with, but it was close down the stretch. It looked like Fresno State was going to get the win, but then Darius Brown hit a three-pointer, a deep three with 1 second left to force overtime, and then the Aggies were able to get the win in the end. So that was like, I think that was their fourth game going into overtime this year, and they've had some thrillers, but... Like I said, they shouldn't have struggled to Fresno State to begin with, but they got the win, so that was fun to watch.
It's always funny when teams struggle with a team that you're not expecting them to. I think we also, same day, saw that with Kansas.
Yes,
they really struggled with BYU. That was fascinating. I don't know how many people had that on their bingo card as a thing that would be a thing, but it was a thing. It was a major thing.
Yeah.
It was a great Tuesday night for some college basketball.
Well, and it was cool for BYU because I know, obviously, they had the loss to Kansas State, and that dropped them out of the top 25. Mm-hmm. So they went into that Kansas game kind of with a chip on their shoulder, I guess. So, yeah, shout out to BYU Hoops, too. That was awesome. What about your highlight?
I think my highlight's coming up after this show. Another reason why this show is a little bit shorter than usual, I have a doubleheader, my second doubleheader, actually, with the Utah men and women's basketball teams, starting out with the women at noon and, of course, the men later on after they wrap up. But it's senior day.
And that's always fun.
I love senior day. I usually cry a little bit.
Yeah. Is it senior day for both teams?
Mm-hmm,
wow,
yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it'll be nice to see all the seniors get recognized and I mean, really a great group for both teams.
Right.
You have Alyssa Peely, Deja Young,
yes,
Izzy Palmer,
yeah,
who have been so key in making Utah women's basketball what they've been. And then, of course, you have a guy like Brandon Carlson that stuck with the men's team when he could have gone just about anywhere else. And, you know, we'll see how his season wraps up. The women definitely are going to the NCAA tournament again.
Yeah.
The men maybe.
It's close. They're right there.
Yeah, they are like right on the edge. So hopefully we get a happy ending as well for Brandon Carlson and the rest of the Utah men's basketball team. But yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to that. I always like those.
That would be so cool. I mean, Utah State looks like their attorney team. BYU, like you said, Utah could be there, and then the Utah women's team, obviously they went pretty deep last year too, so it's going to be a fun March, I think, for local basketball teams. But yeah, I'm excited to see what happens.
Definitely. Well, the other thing I'm excited about that just got announced for Utah, I think we're also aware of BYU as well, spring ball.
Yes, yeah, it's that time of the year, and BYU actually began this week.
Okay.
Thursday, I think. I was reading from Mitch Harper. So they're already going, but when does Utah start up?
Utah starts up on March 12th, so still got a little time before they get going. But I'm really looking forward to it. I think this year's team is going to be really, really good again. I mean, to be honest, last year's team should have been really good, but injuries,
No, that's crazy.
but hopefully they have a big rebound. I like a lot of the guys that they brought in. I'm really curious to see how they kind of fit in and meld with the core group that's kind of been there from the get-go since their first kind of big breakout in 2021. So that will be exciting. What are you looking forward to as far as, you know, spring ball?
I think one thing, obviously, with Utah going into the first year in the Big 12 for them, and then it's kind of a contrast, you know, between the two teams, BYU and Utah. Utah, their season was derailed by injuries last year, but they've got so many big names returning. They lost a lot of talent, you know, to the NFL draft, but a lot of key players coming back. Of course, Cam Rising and Brant Keithy included. And then on the other hand, you have BYU, who kind of struggled last year, especially down the stretch. So they're getting ready for their second year in this conference. They're kind of like, okay, we got past those first season jitters. But, yeah, it's just kind of a really cool contrast between the two programs. Then, of course, they're going to play this season, so that's exciting. But for Utah, I think one thing I'm really curious to see is, outside of Brant Keithy, who their main skill guys are going to be, right? The running back room kind of, I mean, everywhere got derailed by injuries last year, but the running back room especially, and then the wide receiver room, like, who's going to, who can we look forward to stepping up and giving Cam Rising all these weapons that he needs?
Yeah, I know that that's been a big point of emphasis for the Utes. We saw it in how they handled the transfer portal really the last 2 years. Unfortunately, again, didn't really get to see that play out too much last year because of injuries, because Cam Rising was not leading the charge, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think we need to beat that horse too much. I think people want to forget that at this point in time. But it's going to be fun, I think, to see what some of these weapons, potential weapons, can do. You know, we never really got to see what Micah Pittman and Cam Rising can do together. And, you know, that was kind of a big reason for Pittman coming, was he was excited to play with Cam Rising. And when things didn't work out that way, I was like, oh, I wonder if he's going to be out the door. And the fact that he stayed because he wants that opportunity to play with Cam, I think is really cool. And I think it says a lot about whatever was going on behind the scenes between those two that was relayed to the media, but the media never got to see. So I'm excited to see what that potentially actually looks like. And then you like bring in a guy like Dorian Singer, and I get like he had a bit of a down year last year with USC. That's just what happens when you're a guy amongst guys, right?
Right. Like, they had a ton of dudes, and even USC was a little bit of a mess at times. But no, that's an exciting name to come in.
For sure. You know, Utah doesn't typically get a guy like that. And then, of course, you know, I think there's guys that are already in the room that have shown flashes. I've talked a lot about Munir McLean. I think he has a high, high ceiling that he hasn't reached yet at Utah. I think we saw a lot of great things out of Landon King as far as tight ends go. So there's just a lot of different people in the mix that we don't know a whole lot about. But I think have a lot of promise to kind of take Utah's offense, which has been really, really good in 2021 and 2022. If you look at the measurables, they're in the top 10 of offenses for those years. But just take it up that next notch that I think they need to maybe get over the next hump, which is obviously college football playoff.
Yeah, and especially they're getting helped out a little bit with the playoff being expanded next year. But going back to McLean, Coach Whittingham talked about McLean a little bit. He had a lot of praise for him last year, even though he didn't have a huge impact. There were a few games, though, where he had some nice performances. So that's a name that Whittingham, of course, and Whittingham's not a guy to just give praise to anyone, right? If he talks good about a player, like, you know, that means something. So, yeah, that's really exciting. But that kind of leads me to talking about Coach Whittingham and, like, going into the Big 12, all these changes, it makes you wonder, and everybody's asking this, but it's like, how much longer does Whittingham realistically have left? Especially we look at like Nick Saban suddenly out of nowhere calling it quits. And it's like the NIL stuff, all the realignment, like that kind of just got to be too much for him at that older age. So it's going to be really interesting for me to see like how Kyle Whittingham handles all of this change, sudden change, and it all happens really quickly. Because of course, it's a hard job. Like it's 24/7, 365, and it's really, really tiring. And so there's a lot going on. I think obviously we're going to get at least a couple years out of Coach Witt in the Big 12, but do you have like any guesses on there?
You know, it is going to be interesting to watch. At one point in time, I felt actually pretty confident that he might write out his last contract, which is through 2027.
Okay.
I'm changing my mind on that a little bit because of all the changes you've kind of mentioned. To be honest, it would not shock me at all if this is perhaps Witt's last season and he, you know, goes out with Cam and Brant and the rest of those guys that have kind of been that core key piece. Cause Utah next year, of course, will be turning over a new leaf, new quarterback. Just most of those guys from that 2020, 2021 starting point, they're all going to be graduated and moving on by then. And I think I always felt like at the very least Witt was going to see those guys through just because of the traumatic experiences that those guys had. And I think maybe the way that college football has gone perhaps will push that and make that so. But then again, you know, Kyle Whittingham is his own man. And, you know, there's been lots of instances where people have thought that they knew what he was going to do and he did not do that.
He does his own thing and nobody ever knows. But I do think, obviously, going into the Big 12, the Utes are viewed by a lot of people as the favorites to win. So maybe, you know, a Big 12 title and then an appearance in the playoff, maybe that kind of cements it and he can kind of go out on top. Who knows?
I can't think of a better way to go out to really kind of just put the bookend on what has been truly, truly, truly a very legendary career. I wish it was a little more nationally recognized, just what he's done. It's just something that you don't see very often in college football anymore. When you're good, you always look for greener pastures.
Especially at Utah. I mean, we see it all. Obviously, like, for example, Utah State is even smaller than Utah. But it's like a lot of people view it as kind of that stepping stone kind of program. So for Witt to stick around as long as he has and have the recent success that he has, like, that's incredible.
I know that Jake and I kind of briefly touched on it, but there is a hierarchy in college football, right? I mean, you say Michigan, Notre Dame, Alabama, USC, those names all mean something and they're always in the mix, and there's a reason why they're always in the mix, and there's also a reason why you never really see fresh blood come into those mixes. It's interesting though watching Utah start to have their name brought up in those circles. So I mean, they are really truly doing something that is so hard to do, which is break into that inner echelon top circle of college football. You know, do they ultimately go all the way and do that? I don't know. I don't know. But the fact that they've been flirting with it and flirting with it for as long as they have, I think is really impressive. Now, I also want to talk a little bit about BYU football. You mentioned, you know, we're looking at two very, very different sets of circumstances when it comes to the in-state teams and what they're doing in the Big 12. Obviously, Utah, at this point in time, this is like their 14th season in the P5, P4, P2, whatever you want to call it, ranks. You know, they've kind of been there, done that, established themselves. You have a team like BYU that's just in the process of getting their feet wet, figuring out what it all means, what that looks like for them as a program, as an institution. You know, there were things I thought that worked out well in year one, and there were things that didn't work out well in year one, and to be expected. And I think the biggest thing is, you know, everybody talks about, oh, well, we understand that the depth is different at that level, but like, do you really understand it until you've been through it?
Yep.
You
until,
know what I mean?
Until you get there and have to face kind of the struggles of dealing with that. Like, you get to the end of the season and everybody's banged up. Mm-hmm. Everybody's hurt. But it's just a matter of, yeah, these big guys, these teams in the Big 12, like, they've got big-time recruits from the top to the bottom,
yep,
of the roster.
Yep.
And another thing kind of going along with that, that Kalani Sitake kind of talked about a lot towards his end-of-year pressers, was the kind of conditioning,
mm-hmm,
and the strength and conditioning. Even that in itself is a big step up that BYU kind of was caught off guard with.
Yeah.
And so I think that's going to be a big difference going into this second year in the conference now. They kind of know what to expect. Their strength and conditioning programs are going to be improved a little bit. And even the returning players, they know what standards they have to meet. And so they kind of all have that taste. Yeah, that first year, you kind of get a bit of the jitters getting used to playing, you know, these big names like Texas, you know, Oklahoma State, like, they had some big games.
Yeah.
And now that you're going into the second year, you can't get caught off guard. But I think they know a little bit what to expect.
Yeah, that strength and conditioning is a huge one. And I know that Utah early on had a reality check with that.
Yeah.
But I know that some players kind of complained, might be too strong of a word, but like, they definitely talked to Coach Witt about, you know, we go so hard at it at the beginning of the year, and then by the end of the year, we're dead.
Yeah.
And it is that tricky balance of, especially I think early on, when you don't have quite the dudes, when you don't have quite the horses. So you need to try and condition them in a way that they kind of overcome some perhaps shortcomings.
Right.
In order to be able to compete with guys that are just built that way.
Yeah, because it's going to take a while before you can get to that
recruit those guys too. So it's a fine balance. I think it's so cliche. I hate, because it's such low hanging fruit, but the quarterback battle is,
oh,
fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And that was, again, something that Utah kind of dealt with early on in their first years in the Pac-12. A little bit different circumstance, because they thought they had their guy in Jordan Wynn,
mm-hmm,
and he just couldn't stay healthy. And so,
yeah,
it was every year they were scrambling to find who the next guy was going to be behind Jordan. You know, BYU's in a different situation. You have Jaron Hall, that had kind of been a mainstay for the program for several years, graduate. And then it's, you've just been working on bringing guys in, but it's been transfer level guys, not a freshman,
not
level
homegrown that guys,
that you're,
yeah,
you're kind of building up and working to. I'm curious to see how long it takes them to start getting in the freshman kids that kind,
yeah,
of grow up with the program, because I think ultimately that's what they're going to need to do in order to have this kind of success I think they want to have as a,
uh-huh,
program. But I also get that it's kind of, again, hard early on to attract those kinds of guys and get them to stay through,
especially
the whole thing,
at the quarterback,
yes,
position. Right.
Yes.
But I know Mitch Harper, our BYU insider, he's mentioned Ryder Burton a little bit as a name to kind of not necessarily have any expectations for, but hey, don't be surprised if maybe he gets some playing time this year. Of course, Ryder Burton, he's from Springville. He's homegrown. I believe he's a redshirt freshman. So, that's a name to watch out for. But the two names to mainly keep an eye on for the quarterback battle, Jake Retzlaff, of course, he, mm-hmm, started the last four games for BYU last year. And then Gary Bohannon.
Yeah.
He's a transfer that they brought in from USF. He was at Baylor, mm-hmm, for like 4 years. He had a good year at Baylor. Then he transferred to USF, got hurt in 2022, missed the last half of 2022 and all of 2023.
I know.
So it's been like 18 months since he's played football, but you mentioned like it's all anybody talks about with BYU is the quarterback battle, but at the end of the day, like, it's the most important thing for BYU right now is getting this quarterback position figured out. So do you have any kind of like, do you think it's going to be Retzlaff or Bohannon, or still wait and see?
I don't have a great read on it at the moment. Yeah. I will say, like, selfishly, just because I have a personal connection to Gary Bohannon, like, I'm pulling for him.
Right.
That's all it is. I don't have a great read on, you know, who the who's, the how's, the what's, the when's. But he was with a really good friend of mine, BJ Daniels, who was our quarterback with the Stallions when that was a thing.
Oh, cool.
He works for USF. He played at USF, was a great quarterback at USF back in the day. And we actually had him on to talk about Gary a little bit. And he had nothing but great things to say about Gary. And that's a guy that if he tells me someone's A-OK,
right.
Like, I believe
it.
I trust that.
Okay.
So just because of that connection, I'm all in on Gary.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how he looks. So I do want to ask, outside of the easy quarterback question with BYU, what else are you kind of looking at as far as this 2024 BYU team, especially in the early stages of preparation with spring ball?
Yeah, I think with BYU, one of their biggest struggles last year was defense. They flashed, but of course, Jay Hill coming in, and there was some change there. But I know that Jay Hill is a great coach. He's a well-respected coach. So I'm expecting the defense to improve greatly from last year. Like, I think they're going to have a really, really good defense. I wouldn't necessarily worry about that. I think one thing that kind of worries me is same thing, the wide receiver room.
Yeah.
Like, they don't really have a ton there. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of out of that group who steps up and who can be the main weapon for the quarterback. And I know it's so hard going in and not knowing who the quarterback is going to be, not knowing who the top target is going to be. So that's, I think, like I mentioned earlier, spring ball has started already. So I think that's going to be one of the main points of emphasis outside of the quarterback battle is finding who can be that main weapon, you know, or maybe it's a couple guys, but that's something to look out for there.
That's so interesting because it felt like for the longest time, BYU just had a stable of guys that could catch the ball. And in some ways, I feel like maybe bailed out their quarterback in a lot of instances because they were so good. Puka Nacua, of course, is one that jumps to mind, even though his career with BYU, was a little up and down with the injuries. But I mean, they just had guys like him all over the place. And now all of a sudden, where did they go?
Right. And I know Chase Roberts is kind of the biggest name in that group, and he had some good games last year.
He's shown some flashes.
So I think he's going to be probably the most likely guy of the go-to guy, I guess. Cody Epps is a guy who, you know, if he can get onto the field, I think he might be able to show some flashes. But that's going to be, it looks like, you know, looking at some early articles from Mitch, it looks like Cody Epps might be starting to be buried on that depth chart. So maybe there are some other guys, you know, Keelan Marion, Darius Lassiter, just these other guys that are going to need to step up and give whoever this quarterback is some much needed help.
Whew, yeah. And to your point as well, I am also curious to see how Jay Hill does in year two. He made some boss moves, got some good kids in Ephraim Asiata and Satawala.
Oh yeah.
Great local kids that I feel like were some good recruiting wins for BYU that I think they need to start seeing happen. But those wins won't continue to happen if those guys don't develop and start doing something major for them.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that in that I'm like worried or I don't think it can happen or will happen. It's just more, that's just the truth.
Yeah.
That's just the truth. But I think Jay Hill is more than capable of, even though he's kind of doing some things that he's never done. I mean, he's never been a defensive coordinator, and of course he made that jump to the FBS level from the FCS level as a head coach. So I mean, like, there's some growing pains there, but he's a smart guy and he's always figured out he's always figured it out wherever he's been.
Mm-hmm. And I think growing pains is the perfect way to put it. Like, there were a lot of growing pains last year, and they gave up a lot more points than they would have liked. But again, they dealt with a lot of injuries, and they had some guys step up, like Ben Bywater, Harrison Taggart, the linebackers. And just seeing that, like, gives me hope for that defense, seeing some of these guys that were able to step up in injury and perform. I like Jay Hill. I went to SUU, so I got to see Weber State firsthand
often.
A lot. Yeah, and Jay Hill did a great job with them, so I'm not worried, I don't think at all, about the defense, to be honest.
Well, it's going to be very, very interesting to watch as things begin to really unfold for both Utah and BYU, making their critical adjustments, moves, you know, whatever, in order to accomplish what they need to want to in 2024. Both in the Big 12.
Yes, and they play, what is the
November 9th, I think?
Yeah, November 9th.
Yeah.
And that's huge. And, of course, BYU got the win last time, and then both programs have gone through a lot since then. So it's a big day, though. It should be a holiday, I think, for the state. I'm so excited for that.
It will definitely be a good one. I think people will be pretty turned up and lit for that game. We do need to take a quick break. On the other side, we will jump into some Jazz and RSL stuff. Some interesting stuff coming down the pipeline, more specifically on the Jazz side, that we'll get into a little bit further. You are listening to The Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back in. You are listening to The Saturday Show. I, of course, am your host, Michelle Bodkin. Jake Hatch is out on paternity leave, enjoying a little time off. But no worries, I have our wonderful producer, Christian Esparza, along for the ride. If you missed anything, everything will be up on podcast later, largely thanks to Christian. And we did get things started off mostly talking a little bit about spring ball for Utah and BYU. I thought it was a really great conversation, so definitely, if you're tuning in late or want to listen to it again, check that out. But now we want to turn our attention to, some different matters. Christian, I will kind of let you lead this off a little bit.
Yeah, so this is exciting stuff. Obviously, there's been tons of talk lately of Utah getting two new professional sports teams, one being a baseball team that's spearheaded by kind of the Larry H. Miller group, and then the Jazz/RSL owner, Ryan Smith, he, of course, wants to bring a hockey team in. So with these two new teams, obviously they need places to play. And the Larry H. Miller group and the Big League Utah kind of group that they've got going on, they want to build that baseball stadium over at the Power District.
Right.
And that's going to be a huge deal. They want to do kind of like an entertainment thing over there. And then you've got the, like I said, the hockey team. There was a lot of speculation whether Ryan Smith wanted to kind of have that team be downtown and share a stadium with the Jazz, or put that stadium at the point of the mountain over in Draper.
On the old prison grounds.
Yes, on the old prison grounds. And then it's like, well, if they put the hockey team there, then they would probably move the Jazz there as well.
Right.
So there was a lot of back and forth there. But Ryan Smith tweeted a picture out of kind of like a concept that he has of downtown Salt Lake.
Yeah.
And in the tweet, he says, "Downtown Salt Lake City is the heart of Utah. Our efforts are not about an arena. It's about revitalizing a downtown that desperately needs investment. Imagine a downtown experience like this with the NBA/NHL at its core." And you've seen this picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool.
It is very cool.
It looks like a big down, like Salt Lake City's downtown is not big, right?
It's not, and it probably honestly never will be. But there's certainly, I think, some things that we can do to kind of modernize.
Yeah.
Just make it a little more appealing for people that are coming in and visiting us.
Yeah.
And for the people that live here, too. Like, we want to have fun as well.
Because we're the ones that would benefit the most. But that's, like, what this picture, I mean, obviously, we're on radio, so we can't show the picture. But it's cool. Go find it on Ryan Smith's Twitter if you want to see it. But modernizing is a great way to put it. I mean, he's got this huge stadium kind of in the background and then just like a big walking area, lots of big buildings around it. But the key here is that Ryan Smith now all of a sudden wants to put the team at the heart of Salt Lake City, mm-hmm. which is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they do bring in an NHL team, well, not I think, this is kind of a thing now, like they want to build a new stadium. And so basically they're getting Utah legislature involved. They need funding for this stadium. And I think it was the Senate. There's one bill in the Senate and one in the House. Okay, two separate bills. One is for the hockey stadium and one is for the baseball stadium. And this happened kind of throughout the week. There have been some amendments, some changes, but essentially, our sales taxes are going to be raised to help fund these new stadiums. About $1 billion towards each stadium will come from us, Utah taxpayers.
Yeah. See, this is where you lose me.
Yeah.
I don't make a whole lot of money, and I think most of our population probably feels that way, especially when you take into consideration inflation.
Oh, yeah.
Things are expensive, and I know I'm kind of just scraping by. I don't think, you know, a lot of people would disagree.
Oh, 100%.
You know, so I don't know that that's really what if I'm going to get taxed more, I don't know that that's really what I want that money going toward.
It's hard because, like, especially in the Salt Lake area, like, the cost of living in the city, and this is, like, everywhere, but it's so much higher compared to the rest of the state even. Like, it's so much more expensive to live here in Salt Lake City than it is, for example, I'm from Brigham City, like, an hour north, and it's crazy the difference in cost of living between the two areas.
Yeah. Here's the thing. If I felt like the taxing would be fair, aka the people that are doing better and have the ability to kind of handle that windfall a little bit more would get taxed, I would be okay. Yes, I will also do my fair share. But I kind of feel like we all know that's not how that's going to work.
We're essentially, we're giving the same amount of money as
somebody else that can actually afford it.
Well, and I'll say this, like, Ryan Smith's a billionaire, right?
Yeah.
Billionaires don't get rich off of spending their money, right?
It's so true. It's so true. No, anybody that's a millionaire, billionaire, like, I mean, you maybe share the wealth a little bit, but like not that much. Not as much as you probably could or should.
Yeah.
And I'm being perfectly honest.
What's interesting about the way that this is done, since it's going to partially be publicly funded, like the stadiums are not going to be owned. Like Ryan Smith won't own this stadium.
Right.
The baseball stadium won't be owned by the Larry H. Miller Group. It's going to be owned by the state and then they essentially rent it out. So that's interesting. And that's, I think, from my understanding, that's how most stadiums are.
That would make sense.
Around major league sports. But I just think that's kind of an interesting thing. You know, they put forth, like, Ryan Smith put forth billions of his own dollars. Like, I think 2.3 was the number that I saw. And then, like I mentioned earlier, another $900 million to $1 billion comes from the public. So it's just, it's hard because we want these major league teams here. We want them to come. But then the price to pay, it's like we all have to pay for that instead of the owners
person,
of the team.
The person whose idea it was to even do this in the first place.
Yeah. and it's tough because I'm gonna support. I'm going to go to the games. But it's like, oh, and we don't really have a choice. That's the other thing.
That's the other thing. Nobody's asking us.
Yeah.
I mean, we're giving our opinion on radio, but
right.
I would be shocked if any of the people actually making these decisions listen to a word we say.
Yeah, so, and even if they did, they're not going to change
their
mind.
They're not going to care. They're not going to care. See, we know our place in the world, and it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Another quick thing, too, yes. that I wanted to mention with the baseball one, I haven't seen this with the hockey team, but the baseball team, since all this is going through the government, part of the requirement for that baseball stadium, the government's going to require that baseball team to have Utah included in its name. So rather than like the Salt Lake, whatever, it's going to be the Utah, whatever. And we talked about this a little bit before the show, but that does help with kind of the continuity, like Utah Jazz, mm-hmm. obviously. But that's just an interesting thing, like the government stepping in and saying, hey, the state has to be included in the name, not the city.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm learning all kinds of things as far as, you know, this process goes. I didn't realize how involved state governments are in these decision-making processes. I would assume it's like that everywhere. I can't imagine that it wouldn't be.
Right.
But it's not ever anything I'd really considered, you know, when these moves have been made elsewhere, mostly because, like, I that's just the part I don't think you see or hear about unless you're local and in it.
Yeah.
So very interesting. It feels like all this stuff is moving forward at a rapid pace. It feels like ready or not, they're coming. And watch your taxes.
Yeah, watch your taxes. Save some money if you can. Set some money aside to pay a little bit extra in taxes, I guess.
Oh, I miss such mixed feelings on that. In other news, we're being cut short for RSL. Of course, we are the home of RSL.
Yep,
we,
pregame show starts in about 20 minutes-ish
Let's
here at
go.
The top of the hour. Yeah,
let's go. And then, of course, the full broadcast after that. RSL's had a bit of a mixed bag out on the road.
Yeah.
The last little bit, obviously, did not do as well as they could have against Miami the other week. And then let St. Louis come back and pull a draw the other week. So now, now they're going to be at home, though, hosting LA.
Yeah.
What do you want to see from this squad that they haven't shown yet? At least out on the road early on.
Yeah, first off, it's the home opener. So if you still have nothing to do this Saturday afternoon, like get out to America First Field. It's really fun. It's going to be a great environment. LAFC, kind of a rival there, so that's going to be great. But RSL has had kind of a brutal start to their season scheduling-wise. Like they had to open the season on a standalone game against Messi and Miami. Mm-hmm. So that's a big ask in itself. And then their next game, they had to go to St. Louis, who was one of the top teams in the league last year. So, and then, again, they come home and play against LAFC, who always gives them trouble, right? So I want to see goals. Of course, I want to see a win.
Yeah.
They really struggled at home last year, so hopefully they can turn that around. But they looked already vastly improved in their second match than they played in their first match. I'm not a huge soccer guy, but I know that head coach Pablo Mastroianni is kind of trying out a new formation this year as opposed to last year. And we kind of saw, like I said, improvements from match 1 to 2. So I'm thinking we're going to see some more improvements again as this team gets more comfortable. It's early on in the season. Chicho, it would be awesome if he gets another goal here at home. But there have been a lot of bright spots for the team so far. So hopefully they can put kind of everything together today and get the win.
I think that feels like the next obvious step, right? I mean, nobody likes that they lost, but sometimes you have to lose in order to go forward. And Jake and I talked about it last week. It felt like they were maybe a little awestruck. Oh,
yeah.
We're playing against
100%.
Messi.
Yeah.
Is Lionel Messi.
Right. And I would be too.
Yes. I mean, to be, again, he is probably part of the Mount Rushmore of soccer players.
Oh, easily.
So it's just, how could you not be a little bit? But as long as you learn and you take a step forward, right?
Yeah.
And it feels like even though that was not the result that you wanted once again against St. Louis, they at least tied the game,
right?
Like
they got the tie on the road, which is about as much as you can ask for against, especially, like I said, a team that was really, really good last year.
Exactly. So it feels like, you know, they kind of learned from the mistake against Miami. They took it up a step. The next obvious step is to win at home.
Right.
Like, just win at home.
Yeah, that's naturally the next step in the progression. And another thing with that tie against St. Louis, that goal they gave up kind of came off a big defensive error. So it's like it feels like they really, really should have won that game. So if they can put these opportunities together, they've taken a lot of shots. Their passing has been great so far. So, again, if they can just continue to build up, I like their chances at home today.
I typically like people at home as well. Yeah. There's just an advantage, and especially teams that have good backing, good support in RSL really always has. We are low-key a soccer town.
Yeah.
So definitely if you have nothing to do, you aren't going to the Utah Utes games.
Yeah.
Go out to Sandy and check out this RSL team. Again, they are playing Los Angeles FC at America First Field in Sandy, Utah at 12 o'clock p.m. Again, you can listen to pregame and then, of course, the entire broadcast here on the KSL Sports Zone. We need to jump out, take one more break, pay some bills. You are listening to the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. We are back at it on the Saturday Show. Of course, I am your host, Michelle Bodkin. And along with me for the ride, Christian Esparza, our esteemed producer, kind of filling in for Jake Hatch, who is on paternity leave, on a little papa duty the next couple of weeks.
And he's enjoying it. I know he is.
I know he is, because he always talks about his kids. And I mean that in the best way possible.
He loves his kids, and he's a great dad. And I'm so happy that he gets, because in this job, it's hard to,
it is hard.
Spend Saturdays with your family. So it's great for Jake to be able to do that over these next couple weeks.
Well, and a good point too, like, this is how the world of sports work, and actually probably journalism as a whole, no matter what you cover. But your paternity leave and maternity leave doesn't necessarily happen when the baby's born. It's whenever you can kind of fit it in.
Yep.
So Jake is enjoying a couple of weeks of his paternity leave, and we'll be back at it. But in the meantime, we need to wrap up our shortened show. And I personally can't think of a better way to do that than with technical fouls. So let's jump into it. Christian, what do you have for me?
So I'll go with LeBron James. Of course, everybody here in Utah just loves him so much. But basically, this centers around his son, Bronny, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of hype because he is the son of LeBron James. And let's go back to, let's see, this tweet is from March 6, 2023. LeBron himself tweeted, "Man, Bronny definitely better than some of these cats I've been watching on League Pass today. It was lightweight hilarious." Okay, so that's a year ago. Then earlier this week, I don't remember what day it was, but there's a report. ESPN has removed Bronny James from its 2024 mock draft, now projects him to be selected in 2025. LeBron James quote tweeted that and said, "Can y'all please just let the kid be a kid and enjoy college basketball? The work and results will ultimately do the talking no matter what he decides to do. If y'all don't know, he doesn't care what a mock draft says. He just works. Earned, not given." So basically, LeBron multiple times has alluded to his son having the potential to play at an NBA level right now.
Mm-hmm.
But then he slams media outlets for taking him off the mock drafts. And I just think that's kind of a funny, like, LeBron, you have brought this upon yourself, kind of, and your son.
You know what that kind of reminds me of, and also highly ironic since Bronny actually plays for this team, but it reminds me of Lincoln Riley last year with USC doing the championships. Like, who was talking about that? You.
Right.
Like, it's on record.
Yeah.
Like,
It's always funny when that happens. Like, he's reaping what he sowed, right?
Oh, my gosh. So funny. Classic. Absolutely classic. Real quickly, I will bring this to everyone's attention. I don't know if y'all have seen or not, but there's a little story floating around on the interwebs about Miami Dolphins star Tariq Hill facing a lawsuit from a model who claims his anger caused a blocking drill at his house to go horribly wrong. I must have missed exactly why we're doing blocking drills at his house.
Yeah.
But to kind of continue on with this story, so Sophie Hall is a plus-sized influencer with more than 2 million followers on Instagram. Claims she was invited to take part in an offensive line blocking drill after watching Hill train in his backyard on June 28th, 2023. And let's see, it says on her first defensive line rep, Hall alleges that she managed to push Hill backward, drawing laughter from a group of witnesses, including Hill's trainer, mother, and sister. Hall said in 2019 that she's 6'1" and weighs 250 pounds, while Hill is listed at 5'10" and 191 pounds. Anywho, Hall claims that Hill became embarrassed and angry that he insisted to do the drill in opposite positions. The second rep was apparently interrupted by a puppy, and the third rep saw Hall hold her own. But on the fourth rep, Hill allegedly charged into her violently and with great force, leaving her in excruciating pain, breaking her leg, and now she's filed a lawsuit. I'm curious to know how much of this is or isn't real and how much of this is trying to get free. I don't know. But just reading through this story,
it's a wild one.
There's puppies and plus size models and broken bones and defensive line drills. And
I can just imagine, like, you know, I was watching a video the other day of this old linebacker that used to be on the Texans, and he was known for kind of being like psycho.
Yeah.
And there was a video from Hard Knocks where, like, the running back was in pass protection and he blocked the linebacker. Then the linebacker's like, okay, get up, we're doing it again. And then he was just getting really angry. And then he won the next rep. That's what I'm envisioning with this. And unfortunately, it's not Tyreek Hill's first brush with a domestic violence case. So that's kind of scary. And if this is true, it's really unfortunate because that's not cool. Right.
Taking things too far is never cool. But my gosh, this story has like everything.
You can't make it up.
Maybe you can. I don't know. I will definitely be following this to see where it goes for sure. Well, I think that wraps up about all the time that we have for Christian and myself. Have a great Saturday, everyone. Go out and enjoy the peaking. We're starting to get kind of spring weather-ish. Of course, again, RSL is playing today at noon. Catch the pre-show and the broadcast coming up live now. Or if you don't, head on up to the Huntsman Center for the doubleheader between the Utah women and men. Have a great Saturday, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.